podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Frank Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letizia.
Dean Hammond's here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letizia.
Lifts it and he's got it in as well! And Danny Ings has done it again!
Thanks for checking out In That Number with me, Kevin, the Moscow Mush Milverton, and Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush and my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcast on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to inthatnumberpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Right, welcome to a very special episode. This is episode 158 with no football to go over. We thought we'd take this time to bring in a guest, and with me today, a special one, a former fullback and Johnston's Bank Trophy winner, a defensive mainstay during his time with the club, in one of the toughest times facing an uncertain future with League One point deduction. It gives me great pleasure to bring in Dan Harding. Dan, firstly, thank you so much for giving up your time and chatting with me today.
You're welcome.
The pleasure is definitely all mine. Secondly, how are you? And are you enjoying the break from domestic football?
I'm good, thank you. To be fair, I can't wait for the new season to kick off. But it is nice to get a break from the rigours of the watching, you know, Southampton in the Premier League.
Definitely, yeah.
Break, but it's exciting to get back as well.
Have you been catching any of the England games at all?
No, I got to be honest, I don't really tend to. It's a bit of a nonsense in my eyes, if I'm completely honest, and I think the results reflect that. So no, I don't follow that at all.
Are you fearing for the World Cup now at all?
No, not at all. I sort of get probably the mentality of the players is that they've had a long, hard season, and you know, and they probably just want to go away with their family and spend some time with their family before the new season kicks off and before they head into the World Cup and they're off having to play all these games. That as much as it's an amazing achievement to play for your country, doesn't, you know, for me it's not really needed.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I mean, it's just I haven't actually watched any of the England games. I've just seen the results because of the hours that I do and all that. But I'm no doubt I'll be well up for it when the World Cup starts. But these games just don't really matter to me now. But yeah, being a Saints fan and considering the way that the season ended for us and. I was looking forward to the break and, you know, hitting the reset and then, you know, go again next year. But, you know, I had one weekend off and then I just miss it again. And I guess it's kind of a love-hate relationship with Saints. You miss them when they're not here.
Yeah, you know, if you used to go into the games and all that sort of good stuff.
Sure,
people involved it involves their life so much that... You know, and it takes up their week, and you know they go into work and talk about it, and they look forward to the weekends and stuff like that. So once that's not there, they have to fill a void. So I can imagine why people do miss it so much.
Definitely, yeah. We're going to talk about you really, and about your career from the beginnings, from Brighton to Leeds, Ipswich, and of course the highlight when you signed for Saints. And after, and of course what you're up to now and stuff. Let's start with the youth. Like, is this right? You were born in Gloucester.
I was born there. My dad was in the army, so we moved about quite a lot. I spent some time in Germany. Just outside of London, but when I was 6 years old, my dad moved to Brighton. So, and I've never moved since. Well, obviously for work I have, but that was where I was sort of born and bred in Brighton. I wasn't born and bred in Brighton, but that's where I spent most of my younger life.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Gloucester's more probably known for its rugby and its cricket and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I think I was only born, that was the only time I was there when I was born there. I think we were by the time I was like 6 months anyway. So because my dad was in the army, we didn't tend to spend too long in one place, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I wondered if you were like a Cheltenham fan or a Forest Green or something like that.
No,
were you?
Definitely not.
Bristol.
No.
No. So I guess, I'll ask where the love of football came from then.
Definitely came, you know, from my family. My granddad was in the army and he played football in the army. My dad was in the army. He played for the army. So that was a natural progression, probably, to go into the army and play football. But I sort of broke the mould and was able to have a football career rather than go into the army and play football.
Was there a particular player or team that you followed, or a player that you looked up to?
Funny story, actually, is that when we was out in Germany, I think it was the 1990-91 season that Leeds won the league.
That's right, yeah.
And that was, because I lived in Germany, the only English football that I was exposed to was that team that won the league. So I wouldn't say I was a huge Leeds fan, but I supported Leeds off the back of that.
Yeah, and that was all pre-Premier League as well, wasn't it? So as soon as the Premier League went, it went global, and
yeah,
that was it. But yeah.
Sort of the only English football that I was exposed to at that young age was that Leeds team. So I definitely have a soft spot for Leeds, although I wouldn't say I'm a diehard fan.
When did you decide that you wanted to be a fullback? Was that something you just fell into?
Yeah, it was something that I fell into. It was I was at Brighton and I was in the youth team with Dean Wilkins. And what happened with Brighton was struggling, not so much on the pitch. It was more financially that they really struggled. And Mickey Adams was the manager at the time. And there was a lot of emphasis on the youth team, because that was the only sort of way that they were going to bring players in. They couldn't really afford to bring players in. So Mickey, you know, looked at the youth team and wanted to bring them through. And it just so happened that two of the left backs at the club got injured. So their natural progression was to look into the youth team. And I was playing centre midfield, but I had a left foot. And I think they sort of looked at me and looked to see that I had the attributes to be a fullback. So it literally sort of fell in place, really, that I then sort of played a game in the reserves as fullback, and then I never went back into midfield. And unfortunately, I went into the first team not, you know, quite soon after that.
Was it something that you enjoyed, or would you have rather played centre midfield?
I think centre midfielders get paid a little bit more, so I would have enjoyed that part of it. But no, I think as a defender, it's always quite tough, because you are sort of the first point of blame for goals conceded, which, you know, the finger can be pointed very quickly at you, whereas midfielders not so much. But it is something that I was very fortunate to have a career in that position, and, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world.
That's perfect. And you started UU football with Brighton and signed at the age of 16, spent 3 years there. How was that? How was the whole youth set up there at Brighton at that time?
It was amazing. It was what I needed at the time, and it's something that I always go back to and relate to a lot, because for me, how football's developed, you've got to learn to, you're an apprentice at the end of the day. You know, you haven't played a first team game, you're not even really a professional footballer. So in my eyes, you shouldn't be treated like one. Whereas I think the world has slightly changed now, that, you know, these boys at sort of 15, 16 that are getting signed, they're being signed into a professional football environment, but yet they're nowhere near the first team. So for me, the environment that I grew up in was a little bit old school. You know, it was a little bit tougher. However, I would put a lot of success down to those early years.
Was there any big names that you played with there? Was Dean Hammonds there at the time as well?
Yeah, so Dean Hammond was in the youth team with myself. Bobby Zamora was in the first team at the time.
Oh, wow.
Nathan Jones, it was my roomie, you know, has gone on to manage Stoke and Luton.
Yeah.
He had a good career, but he's doing very, very well as a manager. Danny Cullop, that went on to sign on for Sheffield United. There were some big characters in that changing room, and I was very fortunate enough to learn off them.
What was Dean like? Are you still in contact with him now?
Yeah, no, he's very good. He's what actually happens is I've moved back to the area and he's moved back to the area, and we have seen each other a couple of times. Obviously, you know, we've got kids and families and stuff. life does get in the way. So I haven't seen him for a while, but it's nice to when you do bump into these players, it's like, you know, you can talk about all the old times and things like that. So although we don't see each other on a regular basis, we have bumped into each other a couple of times.
That's nice. Your first Albion appearance then was, what, 2002 against Norwich, I believe. Do you remember that? Remember it?
Yeah,
well?
Yeah, actually. And the guy that was in temporary charge at the time, I actually saw him the other day at my kids' football match. So that was really nice. Yeah, I think we lost 2-0 and I came from the left-hand side of the field. But it was a special moment, you know, something that I'll never forget.
And then you went and signed your first pro contract in 2003. And I get, well, that 2003-04 season must have been pretty special because you gained like a starting place there and you stayed there. And then you gained promotion to the Championship via the playoffs, and that was against Bristol City, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was very rarely, you know, do you find yourself breaking into the first team and getting a promotion under your belt. So I think the whole experience was very important for the development of myself as a footballer going forward. So it was an amazing season, and it, you know, to be able to deal with the pressures that come with a promotion at that time was, I think, it stepped me instead for my career.
And your first goal against Rotherham. But bearing in mind, I'm taking some of these facts from Wikipedia as well, so I don't know how accurate these are. But yeah, your first goal against Rotherham, was that like the best feeling? I mean, when you look back at all your goals that you've scored, was that like the best one because it was the first?
I can sort of vaguely remember it, but I think, you know, playing at the Wiv team, as good as it was, you know, the lack of atmosphere and the lack of people was something I didn't realise at the time. But when you start scoring goals for bigger clubs on bigger occasions in front of more people, it doesn't really take the shine off it, because your first goal is obviously important. But obviously it sort of has a more special feeling to score in front of 40,000 people rather than 5,000.
Yeah, and scoring at St Mary's as well must be pretty special. You've gone on to play for a number of clubs in your career. Forgive me if I forget any of them. So it's Leeds, Ipswich, Southend, Reading, Forest, Millwall, Eastleigh, Whitehawk, and of course Saints. And England under 21. Let's not forget that. After Brighton, you moved on to Leeds. You only spent a season there before signing for Ipswich in 2006. I guess was a more successful time there. But then you spent some time in Southend on loan.
Yeah, so I had the year at Leeds, and that was an amazing year. We got to the playoff final and lost, unfortunately. But the club didn't want me to leave. I remember sitting down with the manager in the season, and they were desperate for me to stay. But what they couldn't do was promise me the game time that I wanted. And I was always a player that wanted to play football rather than sort of training all week and then, you know, either on the bench or sat in the stands. So for me, the opportunity to become the regular first team left back at Ipswich rather than, you know, a young player that's not playing at Leeds, that appealed to me more. Although you could probably argue that Leeds is a bigger club. The lure of first team football was definitely more important to me than anything else.
And were you getting that first team football at Southend?
Yeah, so I went to Ipswich and had two years there. And we missed out on the playoffs very narrowly.
Was that was under Jim McGilwin, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, under Jim McGilwin. And then I came back and we signed Ben Thatcher, which sort of, again, they didn't want me to leave, but it meant probably not as many first team games as what I wanted. So I took a step sort of backwards to go and play regular football again, which then led me on. I spent, I think, about 4 months there, might have been 6 months, and then which then elevated me to the move to Reading, where we were going for promotion to the Premier League.
Return to Ipswich, and was Roy Keane there at that time?
No, Roy came in when I left.
So you didn't get to work.
He was there when I was there, but I went out on loan to Reading.
So you didn't get to know him a little bit.
I was around the place when he was there. I spoke to him a few times. He was telling me what he wanted. and I just didn't see myself fitting into his mould of left back. So that's why I decided to take the loan move to Reading.
Is he as scary as he looks on TV?
Yeah, I mean, Roy was always very... the one thing with Roy is he's honest. So he was... Sometimes you might not hear what he wants to say, but at least you know where you stand with him. Obviously, he holds an aura about him. Nothing but respect for him in terms of, you know, he was honest with me. He told me what he wanted. He told me what he was trying to achieve. And therefore, I can make a decision. A lot of managers... you know, will go around the houses or won't have, you know, they'll be able to tell you what he told you face to face, and therefore you don't really know where you stand, so you can't make a decision. So the time that I did spend with Roy, I've got nothing but good things to say about him.
Oh, that's good. That's good, because I mean, I hear a lot of stuff about him saying that, you know, he has a lot of falling out with players and a lot of people don't get on with him, and you can see why, because of his demeanour on the telly and stuff. And but yeah, that's good to hear. And then in 2009, July 21st, you became Alan Pardew's first signing. I think he'd only been manager for a few days, and then he gets you in. Can you tell us how that move came about?
He contacted... Well, it was a bit of a strange one, actually, is that I was due to sign for Reading, but Steve Coppell left at the end of the season. But the director of football told me they wanted to sign me, but they just needed to get the manager in place first. So I sort of sat there for a few weeks, went on holiday, came back, and Brendan Rodgers came in. And it's quite an ironic story, actually, but then Brendan phoned me up and said that he wanted to bring in Bertie, so Ryan Bertram, from Chelsea. So, and he didn't want to do... The club couldn't do both deals. So they signed Bertie. And then what actually happened was Nicky Hammond, who's the director of football, phoned Pardew from their time at Reading together and told Pardew that, you know, sung my praises and that the club had to sign me. And based on that, Pardew then signed me the next day.
Wow. That's good.
Quite funny, because then when I left, Bertie came to Southampton as well.
Yeah, that's strange. Yeah. Pardew also made some big signings that year as well, because Lambert came in and Hammond came in, Font, Barnard, Punchin, David Connolly. I mean, was it an easy decision to make? Because you had to drop down a division from Ipswich to Saints, and, you know, with the 10-point deduction. I mean, did you ever feel like the move may have been a mistake, or did you genuinely feel that with Pardew in the cluster of players that were coming in?
I think when you look at the size of the club and how the club was run at the time, it was never ever going to... It was a very easy decision. Sometimes you have to take that sideways or backwards step to take the forward step. So not at any point in my career did I think it was a bad move or the wrong move.
That's good. I'd like to hear that. But yeah, I mean, with a 10-point deduction, the players that they had, and you thought maybe you could make a decent fight of it, and ended up finishing seventh that season with the deduction. And of course, the Johnston's Paint Trophy as well, which is excellent. Which is, you know, I talked to Saints fans today and they still bring that up. And yeah, just a magical year that was, really.
Well, it is a magical 3 years, really. Almost, you know, and the problem is I think a lot of us went on to different clubs. And expected to have the same sort of thing that happened in Southampton, but it was a unique thing to have at a football club, and I don't think it will be rectified anywhere again, really.
But Alan Pardew, what was he like as a manager, and you know, off the pitch? Did you get along with him okay?
Yeah. Again, he was someone that was, you know, spoke his mind and would tell you what he thinks. Some people like that, some people don't. For me, it was always very good, because you know where you stand with him. You know what he's thinking, what his expectations are. You know, and if you don't hit them expectations, then you're not in the team, and then you've got no argument. So I liked his style of management. He was a good character. He was a good guy. And we got on really well, actually.
That's great. Yeah, I like to hear that, you know, players got on with the manager outside of football as well, which is something that we don't often hear about. But he made your Saints debut against Millwall. And you scored your first goal quite quickly as well. It took, you know, your fifth game in August 2009. It was Brentford. Do you remember this one? Because I tried to find this goal and I couldn't.
I can't remember who crossed it. But I remember someone I sort of snuck in around the back post. I got vague memories of it.
Yeah, I wish I did. I can't find it. I've been looking everywhere for it, but can't find it at all. But you scored quite a few goals that season as well, actually, in your first season.
One of the things he did do, which another manager I've never known a manager do, is he used to set targets for positions. So for his fullbacks, he said that if both fullbacks can get three goals, you'll get promoted. And then I think the centre halves were five or six goals, and then midfield you're talking about eight goals, and then I think the centre forwards in one is sort of 20 goals plus. And he said that if everyone hits these targets, then mathematically you'll get promoted. Obviously, without the deduction, we would have got promoted. And I can't remember if everyone else hit the targets, but I remember hitting my targets, and I did let him know that.
That's brilliant. I can't imagine Hasenhüttl doing that with the team nowadays, because you struggle to get the goals.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's brilliant. You also got one against Leeds as well, your old club. What was that like?
Yeah, I think I actually remember this one.
I remember this one.
Yeah, I remember Punch. He went to shoot, and he got, and I just had this feeling he was gonna miss hit it, and he did. And I literally made the run, and I ended up scoring from about a yard.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a little tap in.
I remember. I remember celebrating in front of the Leeds fans, actually, and I remember...
But they didn't like that.
No, they didn't, no.
But, yeah, that season was great from a fan's perspective, anyway. Like, personally, growing up with Saints in the 90s, we had so many, you know, dices with relegation and just scraping through, sometimes on the last day. But, you know, it's easy to look back at those League One days and say it was a horrible time. But, in fact, I really enjoyed it because I was going to the games and... You know, Saints were favourites for games, and even with the deduction, you felt that the group of players that we had every chance, and there were some big, big wins that season. I mean, 4-1 over Gillingham, 5-1 over Warsaw, 5-0 Huddersfield, 5-1 Bristol Rovers, and of course the run in the Johnston's Paint. It's some great memories for us fans, and Ricky, of course, banging in 35 goals. Lallana as well, with chipping in with 20 odd goals, but I mean. But as a player, what was that season like for you?
Yeah, I think I pretty much summed it up there. And I think what's key for me is whenever I go back, those days, those players are never forgotten. And the fans let us know that, is that they're very appreciative. The club wouldn't be where it is today without us players and what we achieved. And I get a lot of feedback from fans saying that although now they're in the Premier League and, you know, they had the wonderful time a couple of years ago getting into Europe and stuff like that, is that the seasons that they most enjoy were those three seasons that, you know, we was all going through the leagues and getting the promotions.
Definitely for me, it was great. It was good to go and see teams that we weren't used to seeing, you know, growing up and stuff. But yeah, and as mentioned before, you know, some great players in that team of you, Calvin Davis, Jason Puncheon, Papawago, Jose Font, Dean Hammond, of course, Barnard, Morgan Schneiderlin, and a very, very young Mikel Antonio for a short loan spell.
I mean, it's incredible. Great players. It's incredible, really, I think, the team that we had and what some of them players have gone on to achieve. And, you know, that's credit to, and I don't think Pardew gets enough credit for that, is that he brought in a lot of those players. And he, you know, he kept Lallana, because I think at one point he was off to Wolves. For £1 million, when you think about it, what a ridiculous decision that would have been to let him go. You know, he kept Morgan Schneiderlin. You know, he brought in Jose Font. You know, all these players that have gone on to, you know, great things, win Champions Leagues and win European Cups. So I don't think Pardew and the staff get enough credit for the players that they brought in at that time.
No, probably not. And yeah, but it's just some great players,
it's some of those boys that went on to, and the reason why they went on to achieve greatness is because of, you know, their individual mentality, you know, the type of people they were. You know, they were nice people, they were great people to go into work with, but they were winners at the end of the day, and that's shown with what they've gone on to achieve.
Absolutely, yeah. And as I say, we've mentioned it before, like the just missing the playoffs but winning the JPT, and you were a star in that game, weren't you? Played the whole 90 minutes, and as I mentioned before, so it was magical for us as well. You know, that we still talk about it. Saints at Wembley doesn't happen all too often, but to actually win something there, it was just really, really special. And what was the day like for you? And, you know, what was the celebrations like as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's a special day, a special time, and you know, you try and pick up bits. And for me, for the game, I can't really remember too much about it, but I remember the season. And when you've got the likes of Lambert and Lallana and Barnard and people like that up top, it just makes your job so much easier, because you know that if you can keep a clean sheet, that they will score goals. So it gives you something to really aim for. Is that, you know, if you're in a team where, you know, you take three or four opportunities to score a goal, it sort of deflates you a little bit as a defender. But we knew that, you know, we didn't even need a chance. We needed a half chance, and Ricky would put the ball in the back of the net, or Adam would create something from nothing, or, you know, someone would create something from somewhere, because we had such great players. Is that you can really concentrate on keeping a clean sheet and or conceding as least amount of goals as you can, and you're going to have a huge chance of winning every game. So, you know, as soon as we went 1-0 up, I felt very confident that we'd go on and win the game, and we did very comfortably. I think it was 4-1 in the end?
4-1, yeah.
But what was actually quite funny was that after the game, Wally Downs, who was the defensive coach, he was going nuts about the goal that we conceded.
That was a late one as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a bit of a sloppy one. But yeah, but that was the type of mentality of the coaching staff and the, you know, the players. They were disappointed that we were obviously happy that we won, but we were disappointed that we conceded such a crap goal.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I like to hear that as well. But yeah, moving on to the next season, the 2010-11 season, and it started with tragedy, of course, because Marcus Lieber had sadly passed away, and it rocked the entire city, really. And I mean, how did the club and yourself deal with that?
I mean, it's a sad moment, and you know, we're all thankful for Marcus for saving the club and putting the money in and things like that. But, you know, we didn't know him on a personal level, so, you know, it's sad for the family and sad for, but life does move on. So, and I'm sure that, you know, he would have wanted us to carry on as normal, and which we did, I think, very well.
Yeah, well, it didn't start a bit brightly as we hoped, because you lost home to Plymouth, I believe, on the first day, and then it was Leighton Orient, I think it was 1-1. But then a 4-0 win at Bristol Rovers, and then days later, Alan Pardew sacked. I mean, that must have been a shock to you.
Maybe not. I mean, I think there was obviously friction or tension between the manager and the chairman. The only thing is knowing Nicola and knowing him well is that, you know, he was a winner as well. You know, and he had to make tough decisions, and he wasn't afraid to make tough decisions. And sacking Pardew was probably one of the toughest decisions he would have had to have done. But it worked out for the best for the football club.
Yeah, I mean, it did, because Nigel Adkins came in. And I mean, how did you adjust to that, to the new structure? And, you know, from the outside looking in, Adkins, it just seems like a great guy to root for. You know, he seems like a great manager to play for as well. Was it the same feelings for you?
Yeah, I mean, we were in the first quarter, so whoever the gaffer is, just get on with it. And you're always going to give your best, and you've got to respect the decisions of the club, and that's what the club wanted to do. They thought that was the best way for the club to move forward. And that's what, as professionals, we do. We just get on with it.
And, of course, the season was great. I mean, the main crux of the team stayed where they were. You know, Lambert with the goals, and, you know, the rest of the squad, you included, being involved most weeks. And I think you played 36 games that year, which was, you know, reliable. And I think you were named in the League One Team of the Year as well that season. So
yeah, I think there was five of us, which again is unheard of, really, that, you know, you have that accolade. But it is the highest accolade you can have. So it is, you know, to be voted by other players from opposition teams, that you're the best in that position was very special as well. So it was a good time.
Yeah, it was well deserved as well. Gooley came in, did well in his debut season. The 11 goals he scored, he got given a permanent deal at the end of that. What was he like?
Yeah, he was a character.
He seems like it.
liked his fashion and things like that. But again, I think he came in. possibly with not the attitude that he left with. So what I mean by that is we had some very strong characters in that changing room, even the likes of a young Adam Lallana. You know, we were a team that didn't take much, you know, we wanted to do things the right way. And if people weren't doing things the right way, we had a mentality in the squad to tell them in the right way. I think, you know, from the older pros to the captain, you know, Calvin Davis and Danny Butterfield and people like that, they wouldn't accept certain behaviours. And I think we managed the changing room very, very well, which in this day and age is a very important thing to do. So I think he came in with one attitude and we very quickly adjusted it. And obviously he flourished with it.
And also, very young Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain came into the team then as well.
Yeah. He was, you know, again, another player that's gone on to win Champions Leagues and play for his country and things like that. Another product of the Southampton youth setup that was given a chance. And again, you know, if you speak to Chambo, I'm sure that he has nothing but nice things to say about, you know, the boys that were in the changing room at the time that helped him carve his career out.
Did you know at the time that how good he was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, you don't come into an environment with those players that we had at the age of 16 without having something special about you. So he was obviously a special talent. And he's gone on to show everyone what a good player he is.
Rumours of him coming back as well, start of the off season.
Yeah, but I would imagine so. I'd see that as a very positive, good move for him, where he's going to play some regular football.
I'd like it. I would. But yeah, much like the season before, it was some cracking games there. Big wins as well, like 6-0 at Oldham, 3-1 at Bournemouth, 4-0 Exeter, 4-1 Huddersfield. But the game that I always remember is that 4-4 with Peterborough at London Road. You started in that game. I mean,
yeah,
how do you describe it?
I think it's
on up.
I was on the telly on it online and see that game going on. Yeah, I'm actually sick to death of it now.
Conceding a late penalty as well. It's just, yeah, looking back, it's a tough one to take. But yeah, it was an incredible game. It was great.
I don't think there are many games where we conceded four goals, especially with that back four that we had in Calvin goal.
Yeah, it was definitely a special one. But yeah, anyway, it all ended in smiles because promotion to the Championship, finishing second, 3 points behind your old club, Brighton. I mean, was that good for you? Was that something you were looking for, seeing both Saints and Brighton go up? And, you know, even then, how did you feel about playing against your old clubs? Is it something that you relished or dreaded?
No, it's always nice to go back. Majority of the same, the backroom staff are the same, so it's always very nice to go and see them and speak to them again. In terms of, it was fantastic for the Seaside clubs to both get promoted, but for me, yes, it was nice to see them up there, and it's so nice to see them doing well. But it didn't really matter. The only thing that mattered to me was the team that I was playing for, and that was Southampton. And the fact that Brighton got promoted, yeah, that's great, but it didn't really affect me in any way, shape or form.
That's a good answer. I like that. Okay, then we're moving on to the 2011-12 season. And yeah, this was it. This is the season, wasn't it? You signed a new deal at the start of that season. Is that right?
Yeah. So, we brought in, I think the club realised that maybe Ryan Dixon was sort of struggling to step up to the level that was needed. And Nicola had a vision for two players for every position to create, you know, a squad mentality. So therefore, they needed another left back in their right. So they went out and bought Danny Fox. But part of the deal was, I think they wanted to reward me for what we'd achieved so far, and to make sure that I knew that I was a huge still part of their plans. So they gave me a new 3-year deal.
When Fox came in, did Atkins like tell you that it's going to be, you know, the left back role is going to be between you two?
It's all spoken about before. Yeah. What the 3-year deal was reassurance that I was still a huge part of the plans. Which, you know, if you are a player and they bring someone in your position, which happens all the time, clubs don't always reward the players that are there. So I saw it as a huge positive. That, you know, Nicola wanted me to stay at the club, and the fact that they were offering a 3-year deal and what they put on the table was was exciting for myself and my family.
When we had Dean Hammond on the show, we asked him about this season and we said, you know, what was the goal for the season? And did you think that automatic promotion was a realistic goal? And he said yes. Do you agree with him? Was this the case? Did you set out going up to the Premier League in your first attempt?
Yeah, without a doubt. You just have to look at the players we had in the squad. You know, sort of 90% of them are Premier League players. So, you know, it's where the club deserved to be. It's where the players that were in the squad deserved to be. And it's where we wanted to be. So it was always the goal, without a doubt. And it's actually funny that after the promotion, we went out to Vegas and we were sat with the Norwich squad, and they'd actually achieved what we achieved but a year earlier. So they went to that promotions, and they were sat there after their promotion to the Premier League. And I think we all sort of secretly said to ourselves, well, that, you know, we looked around and we said that could definitely be us next year. And then we, 12 months later, we did exactly that.
That's brilliant. Yeah, and that's some standout games from that season as well. Obviously, opening up with that 3-1 win against Leeds, which was massive because I never expected that at all. 5-2 at Ipswich, another one of your former teams.
Yeah.
3-0 Brighton, 3-0 Forest, all of your clubs.
Yeah. I think, you know, if you're going to achieve anything in the season, a good start is so important. But then saying that, you look at Forest, yeah, they were bottom of the table.
They sure were, yeah.
So maybe not. But if you're going to achieve automatic promotion, you've got to have a good start. And, you know, we had a really good pre-season. Did all the things right, like you said, there is the first 10 games. I think were really, really good results.
Excellent, yeah. And I remember the Millwall game. That was at Millwall. Went up 3-2 with the late win. Yeah, that's fantastic.
And again, of course, like I remember it because Ricky took the penalty with the last kick of the game, and you just know that he's going to put it in the back of the net.
It just stays so cool all the time, just so calm, and it just, yeah, amazes me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes them so great. That's what the players do have. They have that calmness and the ability that no matter what the pressure is, to stay ice cool, and he had that in abundance.
Yeah, he did. And that 4-0 win over Coventry on the last day, great times. And you got to witness a couple of South Coast derbies this season as well. They both ended in draws. But what was that like, you know, and the preparation for a game like that?
Yeah, no, they were good. They were fantastic. you know, the atmosphere was amazing. I actually remember playing Portsmouth when they was in the Premier League under Pardew. I think they turned us over 4-1, but it was expected because we was in the redevelopment stages, and they were doing well in the Premier League, and
that's right.
And that was even from the Southampton point of view, is that we got beaten quite comfortably at the end. But I could see, you know, the desire, the passion, and what it meant to the fans just to be playing in that game. So, you know, when we went to Fratton Park, and you know, you're travelling down the it's the A27, isn't it, or the M27?
M27, yeah, M27.
You know, their fans are throwing rocks at the buses off the bridges and things like that. And the closer you get to Fratton Park, you know, the more ferocious the away fans are being towards, just the bus. So, a lot of people can become intimidated by that. But, you know, we were very confident that, like I say, that the players that we had in the team at the time, if we went out and did our jobs properly, that we would end up winning games of football quite comfortably.
In training, like, does it become more intense leading up to a derby? I mean, do managers drill it in to you, or players treat it as any other game?
That's completely opposite to what you want to, you know, just because they are your rivals, you still have to, you know, you can't, everything has to be the same. You just have to treat it like a normal game, although it's not. You have to treat it like a normal game. Otherwise, you know, mistakes can creep in and things like that. You need to keep your calm and composure and not, you know, lose that composure during the game. So for me, it was all about just trying to keep everything level, everything the same, and not, you know, making it into this special occasion and this big thing. Although, you know, the fans want it to be, you need to
get those
calm. And that's the most important thing.
I don't know how you guys do it. I really don't. It's just like for a fan, the week building up to a game like that, you're thinking about it all the time, and it's big responsibility for the players. It sure is.
And you know, players, we know that, but you can't get caught up in the emotions of it all, because you know you won't be on the pitch very long. And that's the important thing, is that everyone goes out knowing their job roles and responsibilities and sees them through. You know, at the end of the day, you can only get 3 points. Obviously, it's important for the fans, but by winning, you still only get 3 points. You don't get more points for beating your rivals or anything like that. So it's about, you know, seeing the task ahead and seeing the job through.
Wise words. After the promotion to the Premier League, you left for Forest. Was that your decision to leave? Does it come back to the fact that you just wanted more?
Yeah, I'm sure it was coming through. And again, a conversation with Nicola was had. And Nicola was very adamant that the club wanted to push through these young players. And he said that the club will be doing that. He wanted me to stay. But for me, there was a couple of personal issues that sort of pushed me towards that move. And it was a sad time, really, because I didn't really want to leave. Like I say, the club were very good to me. They wanted me to stay. I couldn't guarantee me first team football. And with the fact that they were pushing Luke through, which obviously was the right decision to make. For me, playing football is the most important thing. So rather than sitting there and not really contributing towards the team or the squad, would have been not a nice feeling. So I chose to go and play regular first-team football again, which I had done throughout my whole career. I was always one that wanted to play,
yeah.
No matter what. And for me, what we'd achieved at Southampton, what I could see was they were trying to achieve that at Forest. So again, it might be seen as a backward step, but for me, it was almost like a sideward step that we could go and achieve what I just achieved at Southampton at Forest.
And playing every week as well,
which is the most important thing to me.
So you stayed there for 3 years. You stayed for 3 years and, you know, had a brief loan spell at Millwall. But Forest, back in the Premier League now, and that's amazing, because, you know, I was pleased with that, and I assume that you are too. And, you know, I haven't had them in the Premier League for a while. I think, you know, I remember back to the days of Teddy Sheringham and Roy Keane and Brian Clough. So, yeah, it's great to have them.
That's a huge one. It's a world-renowned club. We were world-renowned football player. You know, I think a lot of teams or a lot of fans think that the club deserves to be in the Premier League. And, you know, ultimately, you can only do that by football. But in terms of what they'll bring to the Premier League, they are definitely a Premier League side. In terms of off the pitch, definitely a Premier League club, and the Premier League will be better with them in it.
Got to go to Newcastle in the first game, I think. That'll be a good one. and then you played for Eastleigh and Whitehawk. But I read here on Wikipedia as well, and I hope you can clear this up for me. Is it true that you turned down and moved to Portsmouth?
Yeah, when I finished at Forest, I had a few options, but for personal reasons, what myself and my wife was going through with our children, I didn't want to move up north. I had an offer to go and play for a championship club, which I turned down, and then I think Portsmouth sort of work this out or overheard for an agent or something that I was wanting to stay down south. So I think they sort of tried to come in and maybe make a deal or an offer. But for me, I lived in Southampton. I'd had all those amazing times with Southampton. What I didn't want to do was to upset what I'd created or what we'd created by doing that. So I don't regret it in the slightest, but I don't think I would have had the same respect from the fans that I have now if I would have made that move. If you live away from Southampton and you played for Southampton and then for another club, I think that's completely... You know, my kids go to school in Southampton. You walk down the road and, you know, everyone's a Southampton fan. And I just think it causes issues that you might not want to cause in your personal life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good decision. I'm glad that you turned it down anyway. But we have to mention the England under-21. Four appearances. Was that all under Peter Taylor?
Yes, that was all under Peter Taylor, yes.
And what was he like and how was it representing your country?
He was amazing. You know, I can't thank him enough for what he did for my personal career and the confidence that he gave me. And obviously those four England caps that he gave me as well. So, he's a fantastic manager. He's a fantastic person. And I've got nothing but good things to say to him and about him. Yeah, I mean, it's the highest accolade you can have. So it's something that will stick with me forever. You know, my caps are and my shirts are up around my house, and you know they're nice for my son to see, and you know they're nice for me to see, and to think about those occasions.
And today, what are you doing with yourself these days? And
we moved back to Brighton, which was always going to be our plan to do that at some point. So we've done that, and now I work at a local independent school called Beeds, and I help out with the football department there. So I just do the football, which is a really impressive program, which I absolutely love doing, basically.
Excellent. That's brilliant. And just before we let you go, I'm just going to ask you a few quick fire questions about your teammates. First one that comes to mind anyway. Best player you've ever played with?
It's going to be tricky. Is this Southampton only?
No, you can be for anyone. Okay. But yeah, safe Southampton would be nice.
Yeah, do you know what? I put my finger on that. But yeah, I've played with so many great players that have gone on to choose to play, you know, at the highest level. And all for different reasons. But overall, in terms of what he did on the pitch and the type of person he was off the pitch and my friendship with him, I would probably have to say Ricky Lambert.
What about the hardest player you've played against?
As in strength-wise? Not, or as in like...
No, just as in that it's given you the most difficult...
There's loads of them. I always found Zaha to be a tough opponent. He was...
It's the speed, I'm guessing.
But, I mean, I played against him when he was very raw. I mean, he's obviously gone on developed massively. But he was just so sharp and so quick. If he could shift your body weight the wrong way... He was. You could never catch him because he was too quick. So you have to be, you know, on your defensive game with him because he was very, very sharp and very, very quick. You got the likes of. I was very fortunate to play against the Spanish national team. So Iniesta was playing.
Wow.
He was, although he wasn't very quick, you know, he was obviously one of the Magician. World's best players on the football. So you know, to get anywhere near him was always very difficult. And you know, and you've got your Lampards and Drogbas and people like that, and so there's an array of them, all for different reasons. But I would probably say that one-on-one player would probably have to go with Zaha.
Perfect. Was there a team that you dreaded to play?
Yeah, the only team I probably would say would there's probably two, and it's probably Stoke away on a midweek Tuesday night. That was never a pretty one. But I never used to like facing Brighton just because I'm a Brighton boy. I have no problem playing against old clubs. But when your family and your wife's family are from Brighton, you know, and you're getting stick off the whole crowd, I did talk on that a little bit. Yeah, that one used to probably affect me more than anything else.
You listen to the crowd a lot when they're playing.
You get to a point in your life where you don't. But sometimes you do let it affect you. And probably I would probably say that maybe once that did affect me.
I mean, where I sit at St Mary's, I sit right by the corner flag. Whenever the opposing players come up to take a corner, the amount of abuse they get sometimes, and they just don't even look, and they just don't.
It's probably when you've got 40,000 people booing you, that's probably when you have to take a little bit. You have to listen to that a little bit.
Best trainer?
Well, again... there's lots you could put in that category, but for me, probably in terms of ability-wise and attitude and dedication, you're probably going to look at someone like Kelvin Davis, or you're probably going to look at someone like Adam Lallana. But in terms of off the pitch and looking after yourself, you just have to look at what Jose Font has gone on to achieve.
Yeah,
he's just signed another year's deal, and I think he's a year younger than me. So you know, he in terms of best trainer, you know, you could probably say look at Jose and think of what everything that he does off the pitch to prolong his career. I've never known anyone like it. You know, Kelvin was the same. You know, he would always be doing his bits and pieces off the pitch to prolong his career and get as long as he can out of his body. But in terms of ability wise and things like that, I would probably have to say someone like Adam Lallana.
Oh, brilliant. Best manager you've played for?
Do you know what? There's lots of managers that have lots of positives about them and a few negatives. But for me, the best manager that I've ever had personally would have been my youth team manager, Dean Wilkins.
Okay, excellent.
So much to thank him for. You know, just give you a little insight to the person that he was, is that when I was 16 years old, which would have been, how long is that? Like 22 years ago, in the youth team, we was playing 4-3-3, you know, and that was unheard of, you know. So the guy was many years ahead of his time, and he studied the game and loves the game, and he's just an all-round good guy. And I still speak to him regularly now. So I've got nothing but, you know, good things to say about Dean. And I'm sure that if Dean wasn't in my life at that point, and again at Southampton, I definitely wouldn't have achieved what I went on to achieve.
That's excellent. That's good. Favourite goal?
I remember scoring a free kick against Leeds. That was probably my favourite goal. Not very important. Never really scored many.
I don't know, for a fullback, you scored a fair few.
I suppose it's always nice to score against your old club. So, you know, although it was a tap-in, maybe the one against Leeds, you know, at home, you got the ball rolling for that season. So we could probably put promotion down to that goal. So probably, yeah, that goal, I would say.
Perfect. Dan, that is about it. I just want to thank you so much for coming on. It's a real treat for me, and yeah, I want to thank you sincerely as well for everything you've done for the club, and you're a massive part of the success that we had in the difficult times. So yeah, but thank you for
perfect
sharing.
No problem. Thank you. Later. Bye.
Up the Saints.
Up my Southampton.
Podcast Network.